there is so much going on these days that we just have to have a potpourri today. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you again in the studio. There is a lot of stuff going on, and it's almost impossible to figure out exactly what needs to be discussed because we're pre-recording this, so we never know what's going to be hot by the time it hits air.
Well, I know that we're recording this prior to the great debate of the 2016 presidential cycle, which is taking place in August of 2015. Otherwise, we do know one thing, though, going into this taping today, and that is that Ohio Governor John Kasich, candidate for president of these United States, somehow managed to make the cut and get into the at 9 o'clock hour top 10 of the debaters for the Fox News program.
Well, let's open it wide up. There's no John Kasich is not in the top 10 of any serious poll. He is in the top 10 of a Fox poll that Fox rigged so that GOP establishments could be in the big talk, and the little guys would be in the little talk.
Yes,
at five.
Right. There's a pre-debate debate among the what I guess you could call the also rans of the early cycle, and that is at 5 p.m. that Fox News is going to be covering, and their coverage does so. They're going to show that pre-debate as well, even though there's going to be a different set of hosts and a different set of people asking the questions of the, well, six, because the 17th major candidate, Jim Gilmore, who was a former governor of Virginia, entered the race too late to actually get his name into the polls. You know, he entered like late last week, and they only took polls through yesterday. This is the day before the debate. They only took the polls through the Tuesday before the debate. Gilmore didn't make it, but because of the way they crunched the numbers, John Kasich made it into the top 10. And I believe Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, is now in the also-ran category, along with Carly Fiorina, George Pataki, Lindsey Graham, and I'm trying to remember who the other one.
Rick Perry.
Yeah, I mentioned Rick. So, okay. But, you know, again, but your top 10 are, you know, the big boys, minus one particular name, Charles. The man who's leading every poll that they've put out so far, and that is the Donald Trump, who is mounting a, shall we say, Quixote-like campaign to take the Republican nomination, or at least to mess up the Republican nomination process, which you and I both know, Charles. We've been around this game long enough. You look at Donald Trump's DNA, the man has given big money to the Clintons. He donated a bill. He's given large donations to the Clinton Foundation.
If I recall right, he endorsed Hillary for her Senate run.
He endorsed Hillary for her Senate run. Really, honestly, Chuck, this is starting to smell like 1992 all over again. Yeah. When, if you remember, when Bill Clinton was running for president against George H.W. Bush, Bush the First, there was this third candidate that hopped in as an independent by the name of H. Ross Perot, and who had enough of a populist streak about him, even though he would be what most of the leftists and some of our conservative, less conservative friends would call, you know, one of the big corporatists or, you know, the one percenters of the world, that he had enough moxie and enough charisma, even though really he's kind of the anti-charisma. He's an anti-hero. He was that way. That he pulled enough support away that Bill Clinton won the presidency in 1992. And ever since, there have been indications or at least theories that the Clinton machine somehow encouraged Ross Perot to get into the race.
Twice.
Now, we roll this ahead to 2016, and another Clinton is making a foray to win the nomination and run for president of the United States. But Hillary's big issue, and although Bernie Sanders may be in, and we're going to talk at some point about the Democratic candidates for president. Since we've done a couple of weeks on the Republicans, we're going to talk about the Democrats.
Yeah,
but we're going to do we're doing a segue here between the two of them. Hillary doesn't have nearly the issue. She may have other issues, but she doesn't have nearly the issue in her own primary as she does against any of the what we would consider the top level Republicans. Other than if you keep Donald Trump out of the picture and you look at the other what we consider the leading Republican candidates right now, and that'd be your Jeb Bushes of the world. That would be, you know, possibly a Ben Carson, a Rand Paul, a Ted Cruz, Chris Christie, you know, and I'll name like Fiorina, Rick Perry, those who are in the also ran 6 at 5 o'clock. She's going to have problems against most of them, but she won't have any problems if number one, Trump comes in and so badly damages the demographics of the base because he's riding on a completely populist message at this point. He's saying what he thinks the base wants to hear.
Which is exactly why Sarah Palin has jumped on his bandwagon.
Don't even get me started on that.
I know.
But that's the way that goes. But he's running on an absolutely populist bandwagon, which, you know, if he can sustain it, Chuck, could end up giving him the nomination, or at least winning him primaries. Let me back up. He will never win the nomination.
No.
Because the GOPE, the GOP establishment.
Yeah.
Control the convention process and the nominating process, and they'll figure out a way, just as they did with Ron Paul, to whatever states and caucuses and straw polls and anything else that Donald Trump might win, he will never get the delegates for it. They will figure out a way to either negate his delegates, disqualify them, or use some technicality to force them to have to vote for somebody else. Donald will never be the nominee of the Republican Party, and honestly, I'm okay with that because you and I both are under a very sneaking suspicion that he is in there specifically as a disruptor.
He's a stalking horse.
That's right. And he's already been making the noises, which I think maybe was a little too early, since he was starting to get pushed back. And that's probably his own personality and pride talking.
Yes.
That he would run as a third party candidate. Right then and there was when all the red flags started going up that this is starting to feel very familiar.
Yes, very funky.
Very, very historical feel to this one. That possibly that the Donald is in some way, shape, or form, whether actively or passively, really working toward ensuring that Hillary Clinton becomes the president of the United States. One, by throwing the Republican primary process in such an uproar that he pushes issues like, you know, complete immigration bans. And I'm sure he'll come out like a strong pro-lifer, even though his history is not that.
No.
He will come out on all of these really, really edgy, hot-button social issues to push the other candidates into taking positions. And you know what, Chuck? I'm glad he'll be doing that because it's about time they stood up and said where they stood on these issues. And it's like, if you're for gay marriage, say it. If you're for some abortions, say it. Don't say I'm pro-life, but, you know, I respect a woman's wishes. That doesn't cut it.
This is the problem we're running into because people react to phrases.
They do.
And rather than thinking about what they mean, they react. For instance, the word conservative.
Yes.
What's it mean?
Not as much as it used to.
Yeah. What does pro-life mean?
Well, it depends on who you ask. To some, pro-life means that unborn child has rights from the moment of conception all the way up through the moment of their natural death.
And that includes
victim, their old age.
Victims of incest and rape, which the children are. Yes.
I didn't put any codicils on that.
I know.
But there are others who consider themselves pro-life who are pro-life, except in cases of life of the mother. And some of those, they're very carefully defined so that we understand that what they're really talking about is not a true abortion, an ectopic pregnancy, tubal, something, molar-type pregnancy. Those type of things, that's over there. But with the other people, they're talking about the life of the mother, be like, well, you know what? She might end up having some constriction of something or get it in a preeclamptic condition, and so therefore the baby's got to go. And it's like, there have been other women who've had preeclamptic conditions who have had babies and have lived through it. And I see a hand raising up in our audience of somebody who has.
My daughter, who gets married in September, was the result of a early preeclamptic induced birth.
See, there you go. So it isn't out. But there are people who would believe that that is enough of a significant threat to the life and or irreparable damage of a bodily of a needed bodily function of the woman to terminate the life of the child, i.e. an abortion or killing, murder.
Yeah.
There are others who believe that the condition of how a child was conceived is enough to give it a death sentence. Those are the rape and incest exception, folks, because it sounds easy and it's so nice to be able to say I'm pro-life, but, you know, your circumstances were so tragic, you can be excused for killing the unborn child.
Well, okay, this is where the rubber meets the road. For instance, the word conservative, people have said, well, you're conservative. I don't go by that anymore because I tell people, I said, oh, you think I'm a conservative? What does that mean?
To you, exactly, because we're in a postmodern age. Words don't have fixed meanings to most people anymore.
Well, conservative meant essentially that, and I'm not this, that you want to preserve what exists now.
Oh,
and
no.
Okay, what's the statement? We've talked about this before, isn't it?
Robert Louis Dabney.
Yeah. And we'll see if we can't dig it up here, and we'll read you the quote.
I think I'm roughly paraphrasing it. Conservatism is the dog that chased after the tail of progressivism.
Yes.
Standing just behind the latest innovation and saying, this is where we stop.
That's right. And that has actually been the case. We allow the progressives to sit by while the progressives do what they're going to do, and then we say, well, okay, you're not going any further than this. No. That's not where we're... That is conservatism, but that's not a healthy place to be.
No.
What's a healthy place to be? That there are concrete standards of things you do and things you don't do, and there are concrete standards of powers the government has and powers the government don't have. And the idea that we should advance them because they're quote unquote good for society, or name the platitude. It's dangerous to do this or dangerous to do that. This is why you have the current Speaker of the House of Representatives, John Boehner, who goes on the Golf Channel and cries because, and I mean literally.
No, you do. Real tears.
Real tears sort. And the whole thing. And says he can't play golf with Barack Obama because he gets such a ration from quote unquote right wingers who, and he comes out, and we all knew who he means by this. He comes out and he says these guys on right wing radio who are pushing the country, the certain elements of the country further and further and further right.
Us, woohoo!
Yeah, that would be us. By the way, Rush Limbaugh did not push me to the right. I was there long before he was, and when he first came on, I was critical because he wasn't far enough.
Oh, yes.
And I remain critical.
Certainly.
Because he plays ball, and somebody's got to do this, but he plays ball with the quote-unquote center of the rotors. He calls them out on it, and some of the guys he doesn't think are center of the rotors are center of the rotors. But the fact is that
and again, it gets back to how do you define conservatism?
Yes.
You know, if you define it in a certain way, center of the rotors are conservative.
Yes.
Hey, they're for gun rights. Hey, they're for limiting the federal growth. They're for limiting spending, except in certain areas. Yeah, they're all for this. So they're conservative. Wait. You know, it's like, let's bring up a name in Ohio. Rob Portman.
Definitely.
Rob Portman has paraded as a conservative to many and a moderate to others. 3 years ago, he came out in support of homosexual marriage because he has a son who has engaged in the lifestyle and has turned out to be to identify as homosexual.
Which is really a bad reason to come out in favor of something.
Well, it is a bad reason. But the other part of the problem was once he changed sail directions on that issue, it caused all of those folks who had been accepting his self identified conservatism to actually go back and start looking at his record. And what they found surprised a few of them.
Didn't surprise all of us, did
it? The pro-life Rob Portman has never, in all of his years of being in federal elected office...
Or state,
even though he didn't do too much in the state level. But in federal elected office, has never lead sponsored any pro-life piece of legislation in his entire career.
Zero.
And you see, what's happening, Chuck, is after a long time, water wears down a rock. And you and I both know, as we go to these meetings with all these conservative leaders, we're usually the lone voices in the wilderness crying out about you have to have a higher standard for these guys before you endorse them. Many of these groups are finally coming around to that understanding, and they're starting to say, voting on something that you know is safe and that leadership has green-lighted isn't enough to call yourself a pro-life leader.
Well, not only that, voting for a bill you know is not going to pass.
Just like they just did.
Or is going to be vetoed, and you don't have the margin to sustain to overturn the veto.
Like the Senate just did on Monday this week by bringing up a measure to quote-unquote defund Planned Parenthood, knowing full well that they didn't have the 60 votes for cloture, knowing full well that even if they did get it to a full vote and got it passed even with 51 votes, because they lost at least two Republicans on the Republican side of the ticket, so that would have gotten them down to about 51, that Barack Obama had already pledged to veto it had it come to his desk. They knew that was a safe vote. And so guys like Rob Portman said yes. Now, it's interesting, and you and I talked about this earlier today while we were doing pre-prep. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell voted with the no votes. But then it was explained away that he did that because then he would have an opportunity to bring it back up again through a request, because a member of the prevailing side of a vote has the right of the floor to ask for a reconsideration, move to reconsider a vote on a bill. And so that was supposedly the reason why Mitch McConnell voted against supporting it. That tells you one thing, Charles. Mitch McConnell knew they didn't have the votes either. That sounds like a great way of saving face and making people not think that you were voting to support Planned Parenthood. Mitch McConnell's the Senate Majority Leader. He's the one who schedules the votes. His office is the one they've got to go through in order to put things on the floor. He knew they didn't have the votes. Question is, and there is no question about this. Let's just be clear about it. The only reason that vote was taken on Monday was to give people cover going into the August break so that they could go back home and parade around that they voted to defund Planned Parenthood. They're pro-life. That's garbage.
And honestly, it is.
And the pro-life leaders that I know in this state aren't buying it, because now they know what the tenor of a guy like Rob Portman really is on issues. They're not buying it anymore.
How long has it taken to get them to not to buy it, though?
Well, like I said, it's like water wearing down a hole in a rock, Chuck. It's drip, drip, drip for a long, 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 long time until finally the rock says, okay, I've had enough. Here's your hole.
Well, I got tired of being kicked around and saying that's an unworkable solution. You're an extremist. At these groups who would literally, well, that's never going to work. You're an extremist. And I actually stopped going.
You did.
And I went to this one recently. And you came away kind of disappointed from it. And I came away encouraged for this reason. It's such a sea change from what I saw when I stopped going that I'm like, finally, we're making some progress.
That's good, and I felt that too. But I have been working very closely with a handful of those folks who were in that room behind the scenes, helping to get them to that point.
Let's not forget that you're working with the caveman faction.
Yeah, that's true. I'm working with the guys who are already there.
That group is all full of people who are everybody from caveman to people sort of leaning toward the other side, and people with that are doing desperately trying to keep a foot in both camps. And unfortunately, in the world, that's what you have to deal with. Now, I was encouraged by that because, essentially, as you're well aware, I left the room when we got the rah-rah speech.
Yes, you did.
About how we needed to elect a certain party in 2016. Because, well, that's our only chance to get the Supreme Court, after we had just pointed out and got a prominent Christian law group to say, that's probably not going to work.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, and the thing is, though, and it gets right down to it, there has to be a fixed standard. You have to say, these are the non-optional things. And you don't just use words like, they got to be conservative, and they got to be pro-life. What does it mean?
Yeah.
When you say they got to be pro-life, what does that mean? It means that they have to lead by pushing legislation to actually move the needle in the right direction to end abortion. They have to not do procedural trickery in order to avoid taking a vote or actually voting on something that they know isn't going to go anywhere. You know, they have to define what they mean by pro-life. I work with some groups and we do candidate surveying. You know, we put out the questionnaires and we don't put out
the usual standard.
We don't do the puffball stuff. Okay. I'll just be quite honest with it. Ours are fairly significantly scalpel like in that we ask them very tough questions, and they have to answer every question on our questionnaire if they want to be considered for an endorsement, period. You leave a question blank, we don't even bother to call you. You just are not getting the endorsement, because if you can't read instructions, you're not reading legislation either. So that's the way. If you're too busy to read the instructions on a questionnaire that you're trying to get an endorsement from, you're too busy to read the legislation that you're voting on.
Well, Barry, okay, I get where you're coming from, and I have seen questionnaires from some certain groups in the state who claim that they're weeding out non-Christians and non-quote-unquote conservatives. Blah, blah, blah. And I have seen some of the questionnaires, and I'm like, well, if you ask the question that way, everybody qualifies.
Exactly.
That way you get basically to rub hands and rub the backs of people who, they're not really right. Who I would pick, but that's who's going to be the nominee, and therefore I can be on the bandwagon and I'll have a place at the table. Well, your place at the table will be underneath where they throw you table scraps from time to time.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, to finish up the thought that I was making.
Sorry.
When we make these questionnaire questions, they have to answer some very difficult things. And that is part of how we define pro-life is there's a list, and you have to check the one where you land. I'm pro-life without exceptions. I'm pro-life except for the life of the mother, and we define it.
Yeah.
I'm pro-life except for this and rape and incest. I'm pro-life except this, rape and incest, and severe fetal deformities. I had a couple of people who'd been getting pro-life endorsements who checked that box off.
That's not a pro-life position.
And, you know, you go back to the group, and they're like, well, why aren't we endorsing so-and-so right here? Here it is. Their signature, their response to that question. Or you have these questions of, hey, Would you put your time, talent, and treasure behind somebody else in your caucus who, if you're pro-life, is pro-abortion? And you know what? We caught a couple of them who had been getting pro-life endorsements. Doesn't matter as long as they've got an R behind their name. Guess what? You don't get the endorsement because that's not truly a pro-life position. Because pro-life is more than just being personally pro-life. Pro-life is being not just personally pro-life,
proactively
pro-life, and having discernment of understanding that if you don't put around you other people who share that same conviction, you're not going to get the outcomes that you say you want. And so therefore, you're either deluding yourself or you're deceiving us. That's how you get down to these things.
Or you're deluding yourself and deceiving us.
Now, do I believe that any of those type of questions are going to be asked of any of the people in this Fox News debate?
Oh, are you kidding? Are you
kidding? Of course not. Of course not. Honestly, Chuck, I'm wrestling with myself with whether I'm going to waste the time to watch it on Thursday night. I probably what I'm going to end up doing is not doing it, and then maybe over the weekend pulling up the videos, because Fox will probably carry that for a while. I can pull up and get the highlights and, you know, see which softball questions these guys get thrown and how they answer them. And that's all fine and well. You know, let them go about it. It's early yet. I mean, it's August of 2015.
Right.
You know, we're not going to – and these candidates are spending money like water. I mean, John Kasich is spending lots of money. They are running television ads in New Hampshire now. Okay, did that help him get into that top 10 of the debate? Yeah, and, you know, they were shrewd. He waited until 3 weeks before the debate to announce his candidacy so that he'd catch a wave of media attention.
Well, and also, it depends on how Fox is doing their polling. If they're polling in spots where the advertising is heavy.
Yeah, well, that again, if they're polling in New Hampshire and South Carolina and Iowa, places where these candidates are focusing their attention, well, guess who? If the ones who are focusing resources are the ones who are going to raise in the polls.
Well, normally Iowa would be in December.
Yeah. I read a National Review article yesterday that was looking at this height, you know, because they announced this on Monday that Kasich had made it into the top 10, you know, a couple days early. And National Review had a great article by Jim Garrity that basically said, okay, maybe we should stop and look at this because 2% in a poll and moving up to 3.5% is nothing to get excited about. As a matter of fact, when you're sitting there with Donald Trump at 28% and Scott Walker at 17% and 3.5% for John Kasich in a combination of five polls, and we're all like, everybody's getting giddy over the Kasich momentum. It's like, got a long way to go before you haven't even broken. You've broken two digits, but there's a period in between. There's a decimal place in between.
Right. Yeah, and John Kasich listed fourth on the list. That's the last thing I heard.
Who knows how they're listed? That may just be in the order that they're going to have them up on the stage.
Well, okay, that could be. But I thought they had him in fourth place in the Fox poll.
Well, you know, that was probably an online poll, and they probably just had everybody, all their campaign people and the, you know, Republican regulars in Ohio hit the web. Dude, we used to do that when we were on campaigns. You know, if some news site had a poll up and you realized that they hadn't closed the door on it, i.e., you enter one vote and then it locks you out. If they don't lock the barn door on you, you just keep coming in. I remember one night we had a group of six people. We picked one poll and we just kept hitting back and forth. We drove the polling numbers crazy. You know, it's like, but those are some of the tricks that are used on a campaign in order to create what I call fomentum, because it's fake.
Of
it's
course.
Fake momentum. It's fomentum.
Well, it's back in the days before IP address, one vote lockout.
One vote lockouts. Well, actually, they were, but some of these places were not sophisticated enough to have that in there yet. So,
yeah, I can tell you that it's not easy thing to do.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, anyhow, so you got to watch these polls. And some of the polls, Chuck, again, you and I have talked about this on air numerous times. It's all in how you ask the questions.
Oh, absolutely.
If the race were today, would you vote more for John Kasich or for George Pataki if you're a pro-lifer?
Well,
how are you going to answer that question?
Exactly.
George Pataki is the only candidate the announced Republican candidate who's in that top 6-17 who has publicly stated he's pro-abortion. Everybody else is pro-life.
Yeah.
Well, in various shades.
This is also the false dichotomy that you get. I've had polls in here, and like I said, I'm a target. My house gets called a lot. We're in Franklin County, which I guess is kind of an important county. It's a battleground county. And we get called a lot, and I'll get polls. Well, do you take this person or this person? Neither.
Neither one, yeah.
Well, that's not one of your choices. If you had to pick between this person and this person, who would you pick? I wouldn't vote. Are you kidding? No, I'm not kidding. If those were my two choices, I would withhold my vote. They don't know how to handle that.
No, they don't.
Because the American electorate has gotten to the point where they don't understand the false dichotomy. And let me give you an example, because when you brought up the questionnaire thing, it reminded me of what the RNC does, Republican National Committee.
Sure.
I'll get surveys from the Republican National Committee. And it'll say, if presented with this scenario, would you take this or this? You know what I do with those? And I don't know why they keep sending them, but I put in another box that says, here's what I would do. I would check the box and then write in my choice of what I would do.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it.
And essentially, then they, of course, at the end of the thing, they want your money.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how many times I've gotten, you know, you've been selected to be part of
selected
to be part of the inner cabal of idiots for the RNC.
Yeah.
Who gives us money, but we don't give you any authority to do anything.
Yeah, and that's the problem, Barry. People have gotten so used to getting the false dichotomy, the false either or.
Yeah.
They don't recognize it anymore.
That's true.
Again, this goes back to the definitions we were talking about, liberal conservative. And one of the Christian groups that I can recall several years ago when the Iraq war was on, to be considered a conservative and to get the endorsement of this group, you had to be pro-Iraq war. Are you for or against the Iraq war? You know, the action in Iraq. And I'm like, well, I resent that because I'm against it. And... Yeah. If you want to put me in as a liberal because I'm against the Iraq war, I'm sorry. I'm a paleo baby. I was conservative in many cases before some of these punks were born.
Right.
Conservative meaning what I mean by it, which is someone who is a constitutionalist. That's what I call conservatism.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that.
And the problem is that we have a lot of people who are like, well, the Constitution isn't really clear on that question. Oh, it's crystal clear.
Yes, it is.
The power was not handed to the federal government, and therefore they don't have it.
Yes, but, you know, in their perfect world, everything can be gray and vague so that they can rest comfortably and not have to deal with their conscience.
Well, that's the problem right there. That's the issue. Everybody wants to, I want to rest easy. And so, what he did, the Constitution isn't clear, so that when our representative voted for that, he was just doing what he thought his duty was. Okay, his duty, he took an oath.
Yes.
And he swore to uphold, defend, and protect the Constitution of the United States of America.
Which he's not doing.
That doesn't mean misconstrue it on purpose, misinterpret it, and misapply it.
Well, we've got a lot of that going on, Chuck, and you know we've talked about that at some length. That that's probably one of the biggest problems we have in this country today, in our elected official zone, and that is they just don't understand the governing document they're supposed to be operating under, and so let's just do what we feel like. Let's make it up as we go along.
Well, look, how many times have we gotten into our class? And I guess this is a good time to announce we've got another class coming up.
Oh, that's right. We should announce that.
Grove City. It's in Grove City. It's at Grove City Vineyard.
Vineyard, that's right.
Do we have the night set up? I think it's...
Yeah, it's going to be starting on September the... I believe that is the 11th? 10th, or 17th, excuse me.
17th.
September the 17th. It's a Thursday. It starts on Thursday evenings. It's going to start on September the 17th, and it's going to go for 12 weeks. We're going to have a sign up online at principalpolicy.com and at campamerican.com.
That's right.
And if you are in that area, in the Grove City, your environs, Columbus area, Lancaster, whichever place you're at, if you want to come over and learn more about how this Constitution is supposed to operate, how our founders thought it was supposed to operate, and how we can still make it operate well today by being more informed than our elected officials are now, then please come out and join us.
Well, and how many times, the reason I brought that up, again, Grove City Vineyard Church, September 17th.
Yep.
6 o'clock, is that correct?
6:30, I believe, 6:30. Is our time.
6:30 to 8:30. The reason I brought that up is how many times have we taught our students and at the end of the class we're like, you now know more than most, virtually all the representatives, judges, the President of the United States, most of your state, local, county officials do about the Constitution.
That's true.
You may doubt that, and they'll tell you that you're wrong. All you have to, one thing we teach students, go to the text.
Exactly.
Go to the text. I've had numerous discussions with people online. Well, the Constitution is no, it's crystal clear.
Absolutely clear.
Go to Article 1, Section 8. Go to the Bill of Rights. If you're talking about presidential powers, go to Article 2. If you're talking about judicial powers, go to Article 3. I can show you where that power does not exist. And we've had this discussion even with people who are fighting the battles, the meeting we were talking about.
Yes.
People who are in groups who are actively involved in these suits, very involved in training new attorneys who will then be in later times be available to be judges. And when we brought up some, you know, a question came up at here about why we need a constitutional amendment to protect marriage. And one of our colleagues who we've had disagreements with basically got up and said, guaranteed, if you make it, put it in the Constitution in the form of an amendment, it will be purposefully misinterpreted.
Absolutely.
And I said, wow, he learned something in the years that we've run into him.
Yeah.
But we talked to this fellow from this group, and we said, what about jurisdiction stripping? And he said, you're absolutely correct. That is in the Constitution. That is among the powers that Congress can do. Mm-hmm. He said, the problem is we can't get them to actually believe they have it, and we can't get them to exercise it once we convince them that they do have it.
Absolutely.
So I said, so the answer then is to amend the Constitution because we have elected men who won't do the job they've been...
That's in the Constitution already?
That is one of their elected authorities. And he's like, well, maybe not.
Well, hopefully they'll dwell on that a little bit more and realize absolutely not. It's probably the most suicidal... As a national identity, it's the most suicidal thing you can possibly come up with is to open up the Constitution for amendments, whether it's an Article 5, a convention of states, an amendments convention, can we go down a limited convention, whatever, forget that. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about that enough. One of the things we haven't talked about much yet on this program, which we need to talk about because we are now at a critical mass level, I think. And that is that a group called the Center for Medical Progress out of California, Dave DeLeiden, God bless his soul, they spent 3 years going undercover, creating dummy companies, Chuck, in order to pose themselves off as tissue buyers or brokers to get Planned Parenthood and their like on videotape, basically admitting what pro-lifers have known for decades, that they harvest and profit from the sale of body parts and organs from aborted babies. Now, Chuck, there's this little thing called disbelief.
Yeah.
Okay? And disbelief has run strong in this culture for the last 40 years on this issue. Specifically among those who just don't want to have to think about the possibility that something like that could actually be happening. And who would, you know, in that, as we go back to that whole idea of what, how do you define the word pro-life? Oh, well, that, you know, abortions are safe and rare and legal. And, you know, it's just a mass of tissue. It's just a blob of tissue. It's for the woman's best interest. Well, what we're finding here, and now, Chuck, as we record this, just yesterday, the fifth in a series of undercover videos was released by the Center for Medical Progress. Now, this is interesting, and it's courageous, because the center and their director, Dave, I think it's DeLeiden is his last name, have both been under an injunction from a Los Angeles County Superior Court judge from releasing a certain video that they took of the executives of one of the tissue broker companies who went to court to block them being able to show this video because California law is interesting. In Ohio, if one person knows that a conversation's being taped, whether video or audio taped, guess what? It's perfectly legal to do it. So if you pick up the phone and you're talking to Aunt Martha and Aunt Martha puts on a tape recorder to tape your conversation because she's going to use it later against you at the family reunion, you can't sue her for that because guess what? She knew it was being taped and all it takes is one party. California law, both parties have to know and consent to the taping is my understanding of how the California statute runs. And so they have an injunction because this one company went to the courts. But what happened was then you had Planned Parenthood who went to the federal court to try to block the release of any more of the videos because there had already been four of these videotapes released, Chuck, and each one got explicitly more detailed about what Planned Parenthood was actually doing. And so they got a U.S. District Court judge in, San Francisco, which is in the Ninth Circuit, the most liberal circuit in the United States outside the Supreme Court. And they actually got, they had a hearing on the 3rd in the afternoon as to whether or not the temporary injunction would be a permanent injunction against them releasing these videos. Well, I didn't hear exactly because the news media didn't cover what the outcome of the hearing was, but on Tuesday, the Center for Medical Progress released video number 5. And so either the court said, okay, you've got a legitimate reason for releasing these videos and we're not going to allow the injunction to stand, or the Center for Medical Progress is doing this regardless of what the court says, and it's like, you know, come and get me, who cares? Or the dawning realization that not only is the U.S. District Court judge, and let me pull his name up. I've got his name. I have to look it up here real quick. I got off the spot of where I was. And of course, now my computer's not going to react. It's slow. Sometimes, folks, it's fun when you're trying to do these things on the fly. But anyhow, it's the U.S. District Court judge for the Northern District of California. Well, no, Southern District of California in San Francisco. That would be Northern.
That would be Northern.
That is the Northern District. And that judge's name, let me see here. I've got it here. William Orrick III. Now, Judge William Orrick III happens to be an appointee of, guess who? Barack Obama. But he's more than that, Charles.
He's a fundraiser.
No, he's not just a fundraiser. He's a bundler.
Oh, God.
He is a man who raises hundreds of thousands of dollars for Barack Obama and has in each of his election cycles. He also is a judge who's pro-abort and whose wife is involved with Planned Parenthood at some official level, although it wasn't clear from news reports exactly what she did with them. Maybe it's starting to hit a little too close to home, and they decided maybe we just better let this thing run its course rather than create another issue. So I think the judge may have realized the issue. He was becoming the issue, and that's not good for your judicial career.
There's so much in here. If you watch the attempts to undermine what the Center for Medical Progress has done, and the videos are all edited, quote unquote. Well, look, if you've got a 3-hour long video, why do you want to hear people asking to pass the salt? The CMP has made the full videos available.
Well, and you know what, Chuck? And they got criticized by that because Cecile Richards, who's the president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, came out and attacked. She didn't attack the content of what they were claiming in the videos. She said, well, you selectively edited the videos. And that even when you released the full videos, well, you could have edited those down too. So what did the Center for Medical Progress do? They released the transcripts of the videos.
Right.
The complete transcripts of the videos to show that's it. There's the whole thing. Well, you know, Richards is, oh, well, it's horrible. And, you know, we do all this great stuff for women. Oh, well, wait a minute.
Red herring.
Red herring. If you do an ultrasound and give them a some drug or an aspirin, do the abortion and then give them pain medication afterwards, you're going to say you do four different things and abortion's only 25% of what we do.
Exactly.
Except that that's all involved in the process of getting an abortion. They're playing fast and loose with the truth.
Well, okay.
But here's where it gets down to, Chuck. Disbelief has been what the American public has been running on, because they've been believing this bogus garbage that Planned Parenthood is necessary because poor women can only get their health care, their reproductive health care, by Planned Parenthood being there and being funded. Well, and Ben Carson, I was asked that question in a interview, and he said, well, wait a minute, I thought that was what Obamacare was for. Why do we need Planned Parenthood now? Because Obamacare was supposed to cover all those uninsured people.
Exactly.
So why do we need Planned Parenthood? Why do we need to give them money? I agree with him on that. But the facade of this disbelief is crumbling fast. Video number one came out on, this has been less than 3 weeks, Chuck. Video number one came out on the 14th of July, where the senior medical director of Planned Parenthood of Federation of America, Deborah Nicotola, basically verified that not only do they harvest body parts for tissue brokers, but they get money for it, and that they actually train their abortion doctors on how to do procedures in such a way that they avoid damaging the organs that they're going to get paid for. Okay, so there's number one. They're saying that they actually, they don't do abortions in a straightforward manner in order to protect the health of the woman. That they will manipulate, and really admitted that most of the time the preferred position is breach. Which, Chuck, if anybody's paying any attention, if you breach a baby to get them out of the birth canal, but then you kill them before they get out, what do we call that?
That's a partial birth abortion.
And those are illegal under federal law. So she's basically admitting to the idea that they are actually in it for a profit margin. Now, you could argue that that's not what she said. Great, that's fine. That's not a problem. Oh, by the way, it's also against federal law to buy or sell human body parts, too.
Right.
But that's, you know, no big deal. So then the second video comes out, and a Dr. Mary Gatter is interviewed in this video, and she's the president of the Medical Directors Council of Planned Parenthood of America. And she actually talked about the specific dollar amounts that they got out of each thing. We'll get this much for lungs and this much for heart, this much for kidney, this much for liver, and this much for, and whether you call it I think it's the cavisum or the caput, because that's the terminology they use.
Right.
Chuck, you've taken Latin as a medical student. Caput.
Head.
Exactly. Folks are talking about babies' heads because brain tissue is also demanded by researchers.
Well, here's what's interesting about that. Daily Caller posted an article yesterday. Now they're actually talking about a part of the latest film, the fifth.
Yes,
that did not actually become part of the film, but it's on the transcript.
Uh huh.
The transcript accompanying the latest undercover Planned Parenthood video has an employee of the group admit she finds it "quote unquote" fun to dissect fetuses for their organs and would "quote" enjoy the opportunity to do it on behalf of fetal tissue purchasers.
Yes.
Now, these videos are getting more and more and more and more explicit and more and more and more frightening. Here's a direct quote. "It would be exciting, too, if you needed it dissected, because LaShonda and I are the most curious George of the group," Farrell says. "I know it's sickening on some level, but it's fun." Sickening on some level, but it's fun.
Chuck, that's what you call a sociopathic personality.
It's frightening to actually, you know, people say, well, you right-wingers have all been exaggerating this for years. I can remember when groups number of truly pro-life groups came out and said, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
No one believed them.
Well, that's what I said. Disbelief has been very strong, but it's crumbling fast. Now, Chuck, you talked about the most recent video, but the third video is the one that came out and really didn't get a whole lot of attention. I went back and took a close look at it, and I'm thinking that it's the one that should have been getting the most attention. Now, the reason why is because number four came out like 2 days after this one came out, and number four actually had video of them dissecting a baby after an abortion. You know, what Mark Harrington and the Center for Bioethic Reform and all those folks and Created Equal have been doing by showing the pictures. This showed what happened. But it's the third video, Chuck, and this is the one that I keyed in on because it was an interview with a lady by the name of Holly O'Donnell, who was a former procurement technician for this Stem Express company who was under contract with Planned Parenthood. They're the one who pays Planned Parenthood for the body parts. And she said this, that she worked at the Planned Parenthood facility identifying the pregnant women who met the standards for, quote, fetal tissue orders, unquote. What happened to Cecile Richards saying, oh, it's voluntary and these women are donating the tissues for research? Sounds to me like they're cherry picking and profiling and probably then going to the women that they think they know they've got the right set of data that's coming out of this. Because they do all kinds of measurements and blood work and everything. They know full well how far along the child is, how well developed it is, organ development, the whole nine yards before that abortion's ever done. Stem Express sends this gal in there to look that stuff over and pick the ones that will best meet their customers'
needs.
Order.
Yeah, their order. There's also transcripts of some of these videos where they're laughing about the fact that, oh, this one was a twin. And I can tell you that someone close to me in many years ago went in to have an abortion. And because she had large children, they told her she was further along than she knew she was.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, unless it's an immaculate conception, that's impossible, because I know the exact date. And they said, well, we'll have to check into this. As they left the room, she snuck a peek at the ultrasound. And once she saw the ultrasound, she left.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not above, let's not kid ourselves, they charge you more if it's bigger than they want to deal with.
Yeah.
And now we find out bigger is better because it's easier to pick the parts out of.
Well, exactly. And that's the reason the fourth video, which is the one that got everybody revulsed before this fifth one, because this fifth one is just like icing on the cake, because, and I hate saying it that way, but it's true. Because the fifth video, the admission was done that they actually sometimes try to deliver those babies intact so that they can ship the entire body to the tissue brokers.
Yeah.
Chuck. That is absolutely the final straw, or should be, even for the most apathetic of Americans. Our tax dollars are going to an organization who is basically an organized ghoul. They are profiting off of killing babies.
It's the culture of death.
Not just the charges that they charge the women for the... You know, if they were offering such a great service to women, why are they charging them $500 and $600 for an abortion? And then turning around and making, if the Mary Gatter's calculations are correct on a basic run, around $300 per abortion for if they can get all the parts. That's the reason why they train their doctors on how to do the abortion so that they don't crush the parts of the body where the organs are.
Well, that's also why some of these groups want to buy intact. They want to do the dissection
themselves. They want to do the dissection themselves, which is sick. But the fourth video, they got the comments of the director of the Rocky Mountain Planned Parenthood, Dr. Savita Gindi, who, that was when they were showing them actually doing a dissection after an abortion. And really what it got down to, and the most horrifying aspect of that video, Chuck, was that this doctor had just performed that abortion, had killed that unborn child, and then was working over the corpse in order to, quote, in her words, see how much we can get out of it, unquote.
And by the way, I have an answer to your question about why California, why the,
yeah, the law,
why the injunction didn't stop them all. They have videos taken all over the country. So the only ones that have been stopped that were done in California.
California, excellent, excellent. Well, good for them, because they've announced that they have up to a dozen videos that they're going to be releasing. We've only seen number five. Now, what they've been doing is they were releasing them before that first injunction. They released them like on a Tuesday morning. Every Tuesday for the first couple of weeks, they released them. Then they got the injunction, and then they released that one on Thursday, and then boom, boom, you know, they released the next two. So anyhow, Chuck, we're at a point now where it's even more imperative that we don't accept what just took place in the United States Senate as the best they can possibly do. You don't accept that Rob Portman and company in leadership in the Republican Senate couldn't get votes or find procedural ways in order to stop the flow of federal our tax dollars to Planned Parenthood, who gets over $500 million a year now from the federal coffers. I would hope that has been started in a number of states, including Ohio. The Attorney General has started an investigation of the Planned Parenthood of Ohio affiliates to find out whether they've been violating laws. And a move is on to, with a bill that was introduced last week by a bipartisan group. It was Representative Margie Condit, who's a Republican from the Cincinnati area, and Representative Bill Patman, who's an African-American Democrat from Cleveland, jointly sponsored House Bill 294, which is a bill to basically review and then stop any funds, whether it's state or federal pass-through dollars that are coming to the state from the federal government, to anybody who provides elective abortions, which mainly is Planned Parenthood. The bill's got 25 co-sponsors. However, the question's going to remain, are they going to get it through and get it through a Senate that's going to be getting ready to run for re-election coming up with filing deadlines in December?
And as we've talked about many, many, many times, the period between, say, October of the year before and the end of November of the year of a presidential election,
right,
nothing gets done.
Very little does, because they're all afraid of casting a vote on something that could come back to haunt them.
That's the bottom line. And that is a sad, sad commentary, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry to say that, but it's a sad commentary. These guys are afraid.
Yep.
Bottom line, they are afraid that they might be the one with the news media catches something and beats them to death with it. Let me tell you something, Barry, as we run out of time. That's exactly why Donald Trump, which we started this talk about today, is doing so well. Because when he gets punched in the media, he punches back. And he punches back harder than he got punched.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people have been waiting for decades. And Republicans have been so cowed by their treatment in the press that they're like, if I just say exactly the wrong thing, Donald Trump doesn't care whether he says the wrong thing or not.
That's right. He doesn't.
He doesn't care.
Because that's not his goal. His goal is to make it as uncomfortable for the rest of the Republican field as possible.
Yep. Okay, that being said, we're out of time. Grove City Vineyard Church on Holt Road in Grove City, Ohio, starting September 17th, 6:30 p.m., 6:30 to 8 for 12 weeks. Institute on the Constitution. If you want to know more about your Constitution, you want to know how to use it as a tool, the most effective tool in your arsenal, then come out and join the class. If you've taken the class before, you got all the materials, just show up. Let us know you're coming so we know you're going to be there. If you haven't taken the class before, we've got a sign up for you at www.principledpolicy.com or www.campamerican.com. It'll be near the top of each one of those websites, principledpolicy.com, campamerican.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.